Support for this podcast comes from UCSF Medical Center. U.S. News and World Report has recognized UCSF Medical Center as the best hospital in California for neurology and neurosurgery, cancer, orthopedics, kidney care, diabetes and endocrinology, lung and respiratory care. UCSF Health, redefining possible.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Definitely.
And we're really here this time.
Yes.
We apologize. We have been away. Our voices have been with you, but not us.
Yes. The last 2 weeks we had pre-recorded shows, but we are back live tonight
in all our ghoulish misery.
Right. Just in time for Samhain.
Samhain.
Yay.
Yes. And so what has your week been like prior to this wonderful event we're doing now?
My week's been pretty good. Nothing major or super interesting to report. We had the Tea and Tarot event last weekend, and
yes,
it was
epic
and amazing.
Yes, it was.
It was fun, and it was super well received, and I think there was lots of requests for doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
So we're toying with the idea of doing it around Beltane and having it be more like fairy tea party, Victorian
and that sort of
maypole stuff, and having it be more expansive, so throughout the day, so that way, because, you know, Elvira and myself and two other readers, Daly, who's a local reader, and Pollyanna, who reads at Milk and Honey, we did a lot of readings in a short amount of time, and I love it. I love reading for big groups and doing parties and things like that, but it's exhausting.
Yes.
So I think having a longer day where we can rotate and take more breaks and
right.
like that would be smart for us.
Yes. We were like camels. We were able to hold ourselves together through the desert, but it was a long evening. And then, of course, right after that, we did the seance, was awesome.
Yeah, and it was quite exhausting, too.
Yeah, so we definitely are glad to be back here.
Yes.
It's definitely a fun event, and Samhain, of course, is my favorite time.
Oh, of course. It's the best time of the year. October is my favorite month, so I'm pretty stoked to talk about Samhain tonight. How's your week, though?
Oh, well, it was recuperation time from the intensity of the 2 weekends before, plus regular daily events come and go. And for me, it was just plodding along to make sure I got all of the groceries done and all the things that you have to do to make a week happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I was glad that it was a little lower keyed, and I'm here.
Yeah,
it really made it exciting because even in doing the information gathering that we both do before the show, it was fascinating because just because I know this particular time and I enjoy it, I had some things I really kind of touched on and got a little bit more info on.
Yeah. Last week on Friday was the North Bay Reclaiming public Samhain ritual. So we got to spend a little time with our beloved dead, and that's always nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then this Sunday is the big spiral dance. So this Sunday, the 30th, in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And this year it's at the Yerba Buena Center, which I'm not sure where that is because it's the first time it's been there. But tickets are still for sale. There's still space available, and it's cheaper if you buy tickets in advance than you do at the door, because it's at a new location in there. I can't think of the word. Union. They're union, so there's lots of rules stricter guidelines and things like that. But that's on Sunday.
Mm.
And then, you know, Halloween is Monday.
Yes.
So it's, you know, I feel like I had my big Samhain ritual, but Samhain's not remotely done. I have more Samhain-y goodness to move through.
To juice through here.
Yeah. Do you have any big Samhain plans?
Actually, it's going to be very personal. Mm-hmm. I think that this year I usually do it with a group of women that I circle with, and based on the way things are going, I really want to be kind of on my own and just be with the ancestors.
Yeah.
And I really feel I need that, so it'll be quieter.
Right.
Yeah.
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 Oh, I have something funny actually to share. I forgot I also had one of my cousins gatherings. We had a dinner with the dead, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Right.
And then we did a little meditation trance journey.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to meet whoever shows up for us, the beloved dead. And David Bowie was in my trance. And I'm not like a big David Bowie person. You know, some people are quite fanatical about David Bowie. I think he's cool, but I'm not quite fanatical.
Right.
And he gave me some very sage advice while smoking a cigarette.
Oh, my.
And it includes curse words, so, you know, plug your ears if they're delicate. But he said, do what you like and don't give a fuck what other people think. That was my sage advice from the beloved dead, David Bowie.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. I know. I've found that different things have been happening. I think this has been a very unusual time frame for me specifically, is that, you know, as we all know, when we do readings, one of the things that we hear are also things that are always for us. There's like, it's not because it's their reading and we don't get anything. It's the same things when you do energy work. It's kind of an exchange factor.
Right.
And recently there have been some very interesting things that have been coming forward, one of which was actually in the seance. But it's fascinating that there are all these things being kind of brought in little pieces to me, not necessarily because I've done any particular trance work, but it just happens that I'm like, oh, that kind of thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
So. Well, Samhain.
Samhain.
What is Samhain?
Samhain. That's a little bit Midwestern.
I love it because, you know, in the 90s when I first started learning about witchcraft, all I had was the books that I could find at the local bookstore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know when you're reading this word that's spelled Samhain. That looks like Samhain.
Mm-hmm.
And until you actually talk to someone, and, you know, some books would say pronounced Sow-een or Sow-in or whatever. You don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a part of me that holds Samhain near and dear to my heart because that's how I thought it was pronounced at
first. Well, yeah.
I don't speak Gaelic.
And it's a tough one to speak anyway.
Yeah, Gaelic's a rough one.
I tried getting some CDs to try and learn that. It didn't work very well.
It's hard.
Yes.
It's hard.
Yes.
So we are here in the tide, in Samhain tide.
Mm-hmm.
And although, depending on your tradition, Samhain may happen on Halloween on October 31st, or your tradition may mark it on November 1st, or depending on your tradition, it may happen on the full moon during the sign of Scorpio. So it won't be until I can't even remember when the full moon in Scorpio
well,
is.
Well, if we have the dark moon is going to be this Sunday, then 2 weeks from then.
2 weeks Sunday would be November 13th.
Yes.
So for some folks, that one won't be until November 13th when the full moon happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I always feel like Samhain is a season. It's a tide. And it, for me, it starts after the fall equinox,
mm-hmm.
and it goes until winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the Samhain tide.
Right. And that actually goes to how it was looked at in ancient times as a way of when you hit the equinox, there was a midpoint between equinox and solstice,
mm-hmm.
that being Samhain,
right.
and we were starting into the dark, and there is this tide, this buildup, and then the whole process into the solstice. But you can feel it; it's palpable,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
you can feel the veil thinning. You really can. Most people don't really put much stock in it, so they ignore the feel, the senses.
Right.
Some of us don't, Yeah.
Yeah. And the word Samhain is a Celtic word. It is a Gaelic word.
Uh-huh.
And what's clear about this specific holiday when you connect it to the Celtic people, which is a challenge, and I'm sure we could have lots of conversations
uh-huh.
about what it means to be a Celtic people. That's another show. But it was celebrated, this point of the year was celebrated by the Celts from the Gaulish people, the Scots, the Irish, the Welsh, the Brits, all through where the Gaelic people were, or the Celtic people were, they marked this holiday in one way, shape, or form. It wasn't universal by any stretch of the imagination. And what you also find, which is very interesting, at least for me, is although other traditions across the globe may not have used the word Samhain, they still celebrated this time of the year as a point to revere their ancestors or connect to those lineages or to honor the dead. So that I find fascinating because I, with all of my love of learning about goddesses, you find these interesting connections across the freaking planet.
Right.
And it's amazing to think, in a tiny village in Ireland, they're having a supper to celebrate their ancestors, and a family in Japan is doing the same thing.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
But then that just shows the universality of the concept,
right,
that this is. How it's been translated into different cultures is one thing, but it's a concept that follows just like the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had three seasons in the Mediterranean and four seasons throughout the other parts of the world. But still, there's seasonal changes, and out of that, there's meaning to the humans.
Right, right.
To what it means.
And because neo-paganism, modern paganism, modern witchcraft has really attached to this word Samhain, a lot of what my research to share some of the myth and lore and lineage is related to Scotland and Ireland and Wales, because those tales have sort of survived, especially in Ireland. Some of the superstitions and the myth that may have been lost over time, or culture shifts, or Christianity having more influence, Ireland retained a lot of information and lore.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're attached to the word Samhain, and that some of what we're going to talk about is that Celtic root of the word.
Mm-hmm.
But the ancestor veneration goes on much bigger than the Celts.
Right, right.
I want to harp on that for a second.
Oh, that's good to harp on it. One of the things I found was one of the versions they talked about in the Celtic Feast of the Dead was named for, now I'm going to say this, please, we have to go with it. It was part of my history lesson. Aryan Lord of the Dead called Samhana. And he was the Great Leveler, the Grim Reaper, leader of ancestral ghosts. And that was the version that part of the Celtic version was put on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like different entities that they decided were the names they were going to use, just like, we have used certain names for women deities that we see as the representation of this time frame.
Right. And the other thing about this time frame is that it's a liminal time.
Mm-hmm.
The equinox is a specific thing that's happening, in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
At Yule, at winter solstice, a specific thing is happening. And Samhain marks the midway point between these definitive things. So it's a liminal space, and that's why we talk about the veil being thin.
Right.
There isn't a solidity this time is very fluid and very open and very, there's a viscosity that's thinner than our normal time of the year.
Right.
And so it, you know, it's interesting because it's not just, oh, we, you know, whatever, we're going to pick this date. Why not? It's getting darker, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a real thing happening in our planet and our solar system and with the stars.
Right.
That you can mark that there's this liminal in-between space. And that influenced the myth and the legends that our ancestors were telling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That liminal space. And what happens in the liminal spaces? Well, the fairies are more active. The she, the big fairy people of Britain and Ireland are more active, and the dead are more active.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, and the dead are definitely part of one of the things we were talking about in terms of what the skulls and the bones and the ancestor representations.
Right.
And how right now, even with certain things happening, we seem to see a resurgence in all these different things that are painted on shirts and posters and you name it, it's out there. And it's funny because part of it is a desire to be in at least America, part of a culture that they may not necessarily feel, which is the Day of the Dead, the Latino point of veneration.
Right.
But I think it's also the desire to connect with the lineage of ancestors. It's something beyond.
Yes.
Beyond what we see as, oh, this is what's happening and it's fine and dandy and it's just a fad. I think it's more than that. I think it's a real deep desire.
Yeah.
To connect.
Right. To connect to our personal heritage, you know, especially I feel like as Americans, I sometimes feel super lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have these really cool folkloric traditions that were handed down generation to generation at some point and not that far back. Both, for me, both of my grandparents, both sets of grandparents or four sets, whatever, they're immigrants. So my lineage hasn't been on this continent very long and I feel really lost sometimes. How do I connect to my ancestry? And my lineages are very spread out. It's not like everyone came from France.
Right.
So, you know, there is a desire to connect to that. And I feel like part of the energetic around Samhain as well is understanding death. You know, people die. And the bones. And putting those bones somewhere. And this is my beloved father. And now his life force is gone, and we're going to take his body and put it in this sacred cave or in this sacred cairn or in this sacred place, and then I can come back and connect to him and connect to his energy. And we haven't lost that. We have cemeteries. We still do that, right?
Still,
But for our ancestors, there was more than just a, oh, well, he's buried there now, but we could go and commune with him and ask him favors and leave him offerings and give him food. And in some parts of the world, not taking care of your ancestors is very, very bad.
Yes, it would be considered, it isn't just a sacrilege. It's basically they will haunt you.
Right.
In a
the hungry ghost.
Yes.
You don't want that.
No. Not at all. And I think that, you know, throughout... Interesting. I did find one thing which I thought the last European country to accept Christianity was Lithuania.
Really?
Yes. Huh. And that their pagans celebrated their New Year's feast. It was very similar with the Halloween that we know. There was a sacrifice. They would, you know, obviously we will talk about the concept of sacrifice in this situation. But they did the same thing. They sacrificed, they appeased the spirits, and they called on them to divinate and do that. But that was the last country that accepted Christianity, so it was the longest held in the...
You don't
more
to have a date for that, do you?
No, I do not.
I'm curious. I'm going to look that up.
Yes.
Well, and I think there is this idea of sacrifice and the new year and having to leave these things behind and cut off this energetic. And, you know, let's be real for the ancestors, for going far back, the way back ancestors. This was the point. The harvest was done. If we had done a good job, we knew how much food we had to make it until probably Imbolc, right, until we could start looking at the spring to come back.
Right.
And it could be really bad. Mm-hmm. We might be looking at a hard winter. And that was part of this idea around sacrifice at Samhain was, you know, there's something about the Irish. I was mentioning this to Elvira earlier. So in Ireland, the Fomorians are like the titans of the Greeks. And in Irish myth, in certain Irish stories, the villages had to give a sacrifice of 2/3 of their children, their grain, their milk to the Fomorians. And what I think that really is, I think that it was likely that they lost a certain amount of their stores and their children and their animals to the cold,
right,
and to starvation and to not having enough or being ill or whatever. And that is that sacrifice. Like,
right.
If we do this now, if we make a sacrifice now, maybe we'll all make it.
Right.
You know?
Which goes back to culling the herd, and I was talking to her about one of the things that they do in the traditional methods was to bring the herds back from the pastures, and then they would look through, and the ones that were not going to make it, they could, you know, they would then slaughter them, and of course that would be then part of the not only sacrifice but the food for the feast and all. But it was, they culled the herd, and unfortunately, in ancient times, culling the herd of human as well, mm-hmm, as, mm-hmm, the animal and plant kingdoms,
right,
was part of what winter was about.
Right.
You know,
right,
the only strong would succeed in making it and, you know, yada, yada. But I,
right,
think we are not as dependent upon those kinds of things now. So we need to look at what we can sacrifice, let go of, release,
mm-hmm,
that doesn't necessarily mean human life form or animal life form.
Right.
Plant maybe, you know, like you sacrifice a plant by, you know, burning the leaves or whatever. But I think, what is it we're willing to let go of? I mean, the funny part of this is I've been going through some of my clothes, and for several reasons, but this one was all my sweaters, and I was looking at it, and it was like, this goes, and that goes, and this stays, and that stays, and some of it was memories. It was things,
yeah,
that I've had since I was like, and dare I say, 20,
yeah,
that I still could fit into at a certain point. Now it's not quite as obvious that I can, but it was the idea,
yeah,
of letting go,
yeah,
of that energy that's held in that situation.
Right, right. And that is, Samhain is definitely, there's so much potential,
mm-hmm,
for this time of the year. One, to let go,
mm-hmm,
and release.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going fallow. Things are not going to keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to really look in your personal internal garden.
Right.
What's time to, okay, that crop's not coming back. Let's get rid of it.
Right.
It's a time to look back at your ancestry, connect with your ancestors, your beloved dead, those who have crossed over both way, way back, and those who have died since you've been incarnated on this,
mm-hmm,
planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who do you miss? Who,
yeah,
do you want to reconnect to?
Right.
Who's crossed over?
Right.
And then there's the potential of now what, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me, the day after Samhain and leading up to Yule and winter solstice, I start looking at, what do I want to do next year? What goals am I setting for next year?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't solidify any of those things. I just start letting things like hibernate. I'm going to a bit of a hibernation.
Right.
And see what's in there. What do I want to put my energy and
mm-hmm,
focus into?
Mm-hmm.
And then not until Imbolc do I really start taking action.
Right.
But by winter solstice, I like to have a little list of goals,
mm-hmm,
you know, and some of them are like big things.
Yep.
Get out of debt. It's on my list every year.
Get out of debt.
Maybe this year will be the year. And then there's things like read 12 books,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, the cleaning of the old baggage,
right,
can be those deep emotional things, or it can be literally cleaning your closet.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, my mom used to always say, if you're upset, go clean a closet.
I like that.
Yeah. Or clean your drawer. Or clean,
yeah,
you know. She actually, that was, and she was New England. She's from Vermont.
Yeah.
And so there was some, you know, down-home farmy type stuff that she would come up with in terms of the thoughts of what people would do, is that you would go do an action.
Right.
To encourage what you're trying to get through at the time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, or rearrange your house. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I rearranged my bedroom, let alone my house when I had a house that I could rearrange,
right,
that because I was rearranging my internal situation.
Right, right.
And That's very much like what this is.
Yeah.
This is all about that.
And it's leading into this time of generosity, you know, mm-hmm. again, we're American, so we're moving into Thanksgiving, which is still during the tide of Samhain,
mm-hmm.
right? So there is this concept of what do I have enough to share? What can I give? Cleaning out closets, people do that a lot at this time of the year. Mm-hmm. Cleaning out the pantry and donating the food that you're,
right.
you're is just sitting there, never going to be eaten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the energetic of this
mm-hmm.
part of
mm-hmm.
our cycle, of our wheel.
Which if you look at the, think of tribal and village, and they were small and connected and very, you know, local. And so if you did do something and you knew your neighbor needed something, then and you didn't need it, you would give it.
Right.
Here we are too big and too spread out.
Right.
So when we clean things out, we either give them to our, you know, we ask our friends or our family members, and then we take them to Goodwill or to Rescue Mission or to the donation areas that they have at different stores.
Right.
The same concept just has gotten into having to be more impersonal and bigger.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is the balance point of Beltane,
mm-hmm.
right? Because there is a growth that comes with Beltane.
Mm-hmm.
And we up here in the Northern Hemisphere are celebrating Samhain, and there in the Southern Hemisphere are celebrating Beltane.
Yes.
And so these two things are happening simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This Beltane is that sexy growth, having things grow and be
mm-hmm.
luscious and flowers and blooms
mm-hmm.
and blossoms
mm-hmm.
and fruits and and we're on the other side of that with the withered vine and the
right.
dead leaves. Those two things can't exist without the other.
Right.
And the fact that our planet holds them in that balance point
mm-hmm.
is
mm-hmm.
also quite beautiful. I was telling Elvira before the show about this picture. One of my Aussie friends posted on Facebook, and it was a drawing of a woman's feet walking through these plants, and there were these beautiful blossoms growing. And the way the picture was drawn, you could see the landscape and the line going underneath the earth where the roots were, and the roots were all entwined in these skulls.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote, she was actually from Canada and immigrated to Australia, and so that this is how she feels about Beltane/Samhain, because
mm-hmm.
for her growing up, it was Halloween and Samhain,
right.
and now that she's an adult and has immigrated to Australia, it's flipped.
Right.
And she holds them together.
Right.
They are intertwined for her.
That is an excellent imagery on how intertwined all of these Sabbaths are.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're paired. It was funny today. I had a client, and we were talking. She had some questions, and so we were working on them. And I kept looking, and we kept talking, and I kept saying, this is polarity. This is polarity.
Mm.
And polarity doesn't necessarily just mean black, white, good, bad. You know, it means that they hold each other in the magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn to move the energy between them.
Right.
So I think that taking it to the energies of the Sabbath and the energies of the planetary seasonal changes, it's about that polarity, just as you were talking about North and South hemispheres.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Right.
You know, so it's a beautiful imagery for that picture.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really cool picture. I'll have to find it again and see if I can post it on the Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron Facebook page.
You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really beautiful.
Because I think it would be beautiful to do.
Yeah.
One of the things that we do have, though, is our little symbologies for this time frame. I mean, obviously, we have different goddesses that represented in the crone form, the
mm-hmm.
dark mother form. But we also have animals, the owl.
Mm.
And we have the cat. And, of course, the hound.
Yes.
We all know those. And bats.
I love that.
I love bats. I was thinking seriously of doing a bat house out in the back.
Nice.
You know, put in our pole and do that. Because they take care of little insects.
Yeah, a lot.
You know, the mosquitoes and
yeah.
things. So, but I actually was thinking of that, going, okay, so now I have to figure out how to do that.
That's a fun project.
Lots of fun projects. But.
And with the animals comes the blessing of the animals or/sacrifice
mm-hmm.
of the animals, right? Which
mm-hmm.
is also this Beltane Samhain balance point where
right.
our ancestors, especially the Celtic ones, would make these big fires
mm-hmm.
and the livestock would be run through these pillars of fire, and it was believed to cleanse them and keep them safe. It was a way of ridding them of any evil and helping them to stay safe through the summer.
Right.
Right. And so at Samhain, they would also build these fires, and most villages, small villages, would actually extinguish all of their fire on Samhain and spend the night in the darkness. And this is also something that repeats at winter solstice.
Right.
Which is an interesting thing that this little tradition of being in the darkness carries through. But there is something very powerful about fire. It keeps us warm. It keeps us safe. It allows us to survive the bitter cold.
Mm-hmm.
And this is this is the beginning of the time of the year where fire is really needed.
Exactly.
And bringing those fires back. They're called bale fires because they are connected to Beltane, but they're also done at Samhain.
Right, right.
Yeah, and bonfires and fire in general were used as divination.
Exactly.
Which is something that's super popular this time of the year.
This time of year, definitely. Oracular, prophetic, because they were not just divinations of, you know, small natures. They were, you know, they had levels.
Right.
You know, the prophetic ones for the village or the tribe, and then, you know, for yourself or your ancestors would come through, and they would have, you know, the witches, the priestesses working on that process in big group format, and then of course individually would be the family members getting things from their family,
right,
deceased family.
Right. There is this ritual that I read about in some of my research that it's a Celtic practice, and it was done up into the 18th century.
Ooh,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that cool? So a ring of stones would be placed around the fire, and then the villagers would lay around the ring of stones to warm themselves, and the stone that you were next to represented you, right? And then the villagers at some point would hoop and holler and run, and they would speak whatever prayers up to the gods, or in 18th century, I'm guessing, God.
Right. Definitely.
And they would have torches, and it would be this huge thing. And then the next morning, when the fire was out, they would come and examine the stones. And they would read how the stone may have been singed or what soot may have been left on the stone. And
ooh,
it would divine the future of the person who that stone belonged to the night before.
Isn't
that neat?
That is neat.
That would be a fun ritual to do, I think.
We'd have to have some brave souls to go out and hang out at a hoop and holler.
I can imagine doing it at the beach. I think it would be fun. Maybe next year I'll organize it.
There you go.
It's too late this year. I'm tired.
No, we've already organized a lot and done a lot. So, and as you said, the fairies, the fairy hills, and the mounds that were part of it, that was another part of, you know, the traditions, were that this was the time when those spirits came out.
Right.
You know, and of course we went to the other side. They became demonized.
Right.
As Christianity tried to extinguish the process.
Right.
And then eventually, once again, human nature, they rearranged it so that instead it became, you know, costume ghouls and ghosts and things, and kids go running around, you know, doing trick-or-treating and all the, you know, that. So they kind of, I kind of want to say they demeaned it to the point where it became a childish kind of excursion into that rather than what it originally was a very powerful time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's, this just popped into my head. I don't know. It seems hilarious to me. So the veil is thin, the fairies come out to play, just like at Beltane. And, you know, there's lots of warnings about not eating the food from the land of the Fae.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. And then at Samhain, we set plates for the dead, and we feed the dead.
Right.
So there's this interesting thing, like, humans don't eat when you go visit other realms.
Right.
But feel free to feed the visitors to our realm. We know we feed the fairies.
Right.
Keep them happy and not be devious. We feed the dead.
Right.
Thing. It's safe to eat in the human realm, but it's not safe to eat in the other realm.
Well, and think about it. We want to keep the contact with them, so we want them to come eat our food, but we don't want to go eat theirs because we don't want to stay down there.
That's true. It's not our time yet.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So
other divinations that are common are with apples,
mm-hmm.
which you see in, you know, traditional, I'm saying with air quotes, Halloween parties where people
right.
bob for apples.
Right.
But apples hold all kinds of pagan mysticism and myth and story
mm-hmm.
within them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you cut them and crosswise and see the seeds make
right.
a pentacle on
right.
the side. And this is an old divination practice that I've read in probably every book written about witchcraft ever,
mm-hmm.
that you peel an apple on Samhain night, and you have to peel it all in one peel. If the peel
right.
breaks, then it's not going to work.
Right.
So you have to peel the whole apple, and you toss the peel over your shoulder, and then you look, and whatever letter the peel is spelling out is your future lover.
Now, there you go.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're on the market and you're looking for someone,
go find yourself an apple.
Go peel an apple very carefully. You don't break it.
Oh, no, okay. You cannot break it. It would be a definite no good, no bueno.
Right.
No bueno. And, you know, interesting is that you were talking about Ireland, and I noticed that one of the things that I had was about the people that would bake cakes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they would be basically called in little triangular shapes, and they would be called, this is from Scotland, and they
right.
would be called the bride.
Yes.
Yeah. And the woman who baked it, who made these cakes, would be that for 1 year. And then she would be displaced by the old wife, the Kaliak, which is, you know, the reincarnation of the crown.
Right.
So
right, and there is a lot around baking.
Mm-hmm.
There is, this has become a modern thing at weddings or mm-hmm. bridal showers or things
mm-hmm.
like that, baking charms into the cake.
Right.
And then whatever charm you end up with is your fortune for the coming year. That's
mm-hmm.
a typical Samhain practice, and
mm-hmm.
it's kind of been usurped by the wedding industry.
Right.
I've seen it at a lot of bridal showers, but I really love the idea of baking something delicious on Samhain.
Back.
You're listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rural Power with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candela's Corner with Candelo Cambisa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, Fit and Foxy with Madame Nadia and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
We're back.
So my chat window is impossible. I don't know if it's my computer or the internet or the chat. I don't know, but I can't get in there. So I apologize if there's some fascinating and interesting stuff happening in there and I'm not responding because I can't get in.
Yes.
I'm locked out.
It just happens that we seem to have gone into the other zone.
Yeah. But I want to go back to the cake.
The cake, you got it.
Cake, because I am currently not eating any sugar or carbohydrates, so cake sounds delicious.
And I didn't even tempt her today when I got her tea, and I wanted to get something juicy for myself.
So if you want to make this delicious cake, right, you can add a little trinkets, like a ring, which
mm-hmm.
means someone will get married, or a coin means you'll come into wealth. And you can be creative with this and come up with your own little charms. So, you know, put a pine cone in there,
right.
and someone will grow a tree. I don't know. But, you know, be creative. And there's another thing around baking, which I actually read today in connection to the Gaelic folks. But I learned this from Johannes,
ah.
who Johannes Gardbach, who is a hoodoo practitioner and a Swedish folklorist. He's a Swede, and he's done a ton of research on the ancient magical practices of the Swedes, and he has a book called Trolldom, which is awesome. And so this thing I'm about to share with you, I learned from Johannes, but apparently it's also being attributed to the Celts. But basically, you make the saltiest, salty oatmeal cake, and in Scotland it's called a bannock. And you put like 3 cups of salt. It's so crazy salty. And then you eat 3 bites before you go to bed. You do this in silence. You are not allowed to drink anything after you do it, and you're supposed to do this on Samhain night, right?
Okay.
And when you go to bed, it is said that you will dream of someone who brings you water to quench your thirst. And that is your foretold spouse. That is your foretold partner.
Oh, my.
Because they bring you this beverage to quench your thirst. It's kind of sexy.
Yes.
So,
I think I will try that, as I said. I will be on my own. So, interesting. You know, we bounce around sometimes depending on several things, where our notes are on the table, you know, stuff like that. One of the things that was discussed about what Samhain Eve was mischief night.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately that brought up, because I just finished watching the last of the Harry Potter Hallows, number 2, is the Marauder's Map.
Right.
And the first thing that they say is, I solemnly swear I am up to no good to open the map up.
Yeah.
And then mischief managed when they close it.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because as soon as I read that, I went, oh, my God, I am indoctrinated with that.
Yeah, well, and there's a reason for mischief, right? So we're honoring our ancestors and we're feeding them and we're taking care of them. But think of all those crazy people out there who aren't even noticing that the veil is thin,
right?
Aren't taking care of their ancestors. So there's a lot of lost souls out there who are not getting revered,
right?
Or honored,
right?
And as you know, especially in the far eastern cultures, spirits who are not taken care of cause a lot of mischief,
right?
And it's believed that the mask wearing and the dressing up in costumes and the going from house to house was actually a process of scaring away those ghosts or those wandering spirits who may be more malevolent.
Right.
Who may mean to cause mischief themselves.
Right.
And actually, supposedly, I can't guarantee that this is real. I don't know. I've researched it, and I find lots of opposing information. But apparently, the older versions of trick-or-treating, you actually brought something to the houses that you went to, where modern trick-or-treating is, you know, you have to give the kids candy and ring your doorbell.
Right.
But it used to be that you took things to your neighbors as the trick-or-treat.
Well, that would make sense if you're thinking about honoring.
Yeah.
Honoring rather than, you know, the other way is scaring off and, you know, there's obviously the consumerism, just like Valentine's Day and things like that. But I think that really the baseline is about the honoring, and if you, you know, they were honoring everybody's ancestors.
And even up into the 19th century in Ireland, and I believe this is still happening, Ireland has got some, and England too, they've got some very interesting pagan customs that have just sort of been wrapped into the secular world.
Right.
But there are folks who dress up as a hobby horse, which is, if you go into the mythology, that's the white mare, the night mare, who is Maka, who's the goddess, right? So, you know, you can see how paganism's got its little fingers in all of these secular practices.
Right.
But a man wearing a white sheet who is dressed with a horse skull rides through the town and goes from house to house. And the children gather and follow him as he goes. And it is not uncommon for cow horns, what are those things called on cows' heads?
Horns.
Horns. The horns that are horns.
That's it.
Right? So they will blow the horns and cause a ruckus and go from house to house. And as they move through the village, more and more people come out to join the procession of the white mare.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it's still a thing that they do.
Right.
It's pretty cool. I like all that kind of
work. Yeah. I don't know how we could do that. They probably would think we were gathering without a proper license.
Yeah.
You know.
True.
But, and of course, then we go back to the concept of the Holly King and the Oak King also
right.
coming into play in terms of the timing. We've talked about the goddess. We've talked about the dynamic. And I think that to give due, there is a shift and change in energy. And they you know, the goddess is considered constant, and the male is the considered, or God is considered the inconstant, the one that comes and goes.
Right, right.
Which I found fascinating because for all of us who have been very much into the goddess and feminine energy and, you know, our own cycle of bleeding and not bleeding and all the rest of it,
right.
It's really interesting when put in that premise because it was like, oh, you know, you can have a cycle and this has got the other side of the energy pattern.
Right.
And
right.
they put it into a myth to follow through on the seasons.
Right. And that, you know, to modern pagans definitely like things to fit together even when they necessarily don't. That's super my opinion. Maybe it may piss a couple people off. But sometimes we go, oh, this thing could fit with this thing, and so we'll put those things together. And so it's taken on a modern acceptance level, mm-hmm. even though that may not be what the ancestors were doing.
Does
right.
it matter?
Oh, no, probably not. If enough people believe now that it has importance and it has meaning
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do this thing,
mm-hmm.
then what does it matter? But there are, like, especially this time of year, the Reconstructionist
mm-hmm.
groups, you know, it's very important to folks who follow the Reconstructionist paganism that their specific flavor of Reconstructionism is followed by as close to what they think the ancestors were doing as possible.
Right.
Which is, I got to imagine, really hard.
Well, unless you were lucky enough to have an ancestor or someone's ancestor that followed through from generation to generation.
Right.
Which is not to say it's not possible, but highly improbable that you get more than a handful of them
right.
because of all the things that happen to truly get the exact way it was
right.
done.
Right. And what you find, especially with Celtic Reconstructionists, is that they're doing all the things that we've been talking about, which are pretty universal in witchcraft and Wicca and paganism,
mm-hmm.
is that they light a candle for the beloved dead, and they make a meal, and they create an altar for their ancestors,
mm-hmm.
and they have a mummer's meal or
mm-hmm.
a dumb supper,
mm-hmm.
And there's this whole thing around feeding the ghosts.
Right.
You know?
So. Right. Interesting is that one of the things we were talking about before the show is how we had both seen a lot of the Celtic information, and I happen to have Sicilian background too, and I was kind of perusing the Strega tradition.
Oh, yeah.
And they have what they call Shadow Fest, which is October 31st, and if I can say it right, La Festa della Ombra. And it's basically the union of the god and the goddess, which is, you know, but they do the dead return. They do an extra place setting at the dining room table. They feed the dead. They obviously revere
mm-hmm.
the process. And it was all with fava beans. That was what was fascinating is, you know, these little fava beans. And I'm like, what the heck is a fava bean? So I actually went out and got some. And actually in Hoodoo, they do use the fava
right.
bean.
Right.
But it
for
is
other reasons.
For other reasons.
Yeah.
And they would cook these beans. And they would, you know, that would be what they would offer. They put a plate out for their ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there is the Lara, who is the spirit of the family spirit that is the household.
Right.
Dynamic. It takes care of the ancestors. And you would give that energy pattern of favas. But then what happened was the monks in the 10th century, the Christian monks, decided they couldn't get rid of this. So they would start boiling up large pots of fava bean stew,
mm-hmm.
and they'd set it out at the different roads so that they were offering them to the poor
right.
and to everyone. And
right.
so they sort of kept that going on through the 15th century. And
I wonder if fava beans is still kind of part of winter holiday celebrations. Like, I wonder.
I don't know.
Thing.
I don't know. But that would be interesting. And, of course, you know, from there we add the fact that they started adding November 1st for All Saints Day
right.
and All
right.
Souls Day. So they kind of put in, like, they kind of they worked on the whole process. But,
right.
you know, as it is, it's still the bones of our ancestors, and
yeah.
we still deal with, you know, our way of venerating them.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of All Saints Day, which is a Catholic thing,
mm-hmm.
but I discovered it was introduced in 609 A.D., obviously, and originally it was celebrated on the 13th of May, which is so interesting. And it wasn't until the 800s that Louis the Pious, who I'm guessing was a pope, I don't know. I don't know anything about that kind of background. But he moved it to November 1st. So, you know, often what we find is this, with Catholicism and Christianity, we find this attempt to squash the peasants' practices and to stop certain practices and celebrations from happening, and really to have more control over people. I mean, that's what
right.
it is. It's about money and power,
right?
So here's another one of those examples where Samhain and the honoring of the dead was so ingrained into people, and people were so unwilling to let it go that the church moved some things around and said, okay, it's All Souls Day, yay, we're going to just keep doing it. It's all right. Just don't call it Samhain anymore.
12.
So, you know,
yeah. So we see this because in any given time, the people that are trying to make their stamp on culture and
yeah.
people start doing that. And,
right.
you know, we've got different things, you know, the Cauldron of Regeneration,
mm-hmm.
Caradwyn's Cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are things that come from different things, and then we wind up with the boiling pot.
Right.
You know,
right.
and things like that. So,
well, speaking of the Cauldron of Regeneration,
yes.
you've just been setting them up for me tonight.
I know that. Don't
I
you love
wanted
it?
To, because in the reclaiming tradition, and actually I've been noticing this in the online pagan community a lot more as well, there is this delineation between the ancestors, the beloved dead, and the mighty dead.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it might be interesting to just give a brief explanation of the differences between those three titles.
Okay.
Right? So the ancestors are our personal lineage and really humankind's lineage, right? Because at some point we all came from some sort of creature
mm-hmm.
and we evolved into all these different souls.
Mm-hmm.
But the ancestors are the way, way back, the ones whose names we may not know anymore, the way, way back, but whose blood still flows within us, right? The beloved dead are those that we've known, or our grandparents, the more recently deceased. And it can be the folks who have died this year,
mm-hmm.
but it can also be the folks who have died that we actually personally knew,
mm-hmm.
our beloveds
mm-hmm.
who have passed on, our beloveds who have died. And a lot of what Samhain is for me is connecting to my personal beloved dead
mm-hmm.
and making sure, you know, my grandfather's dog tags are on the altar and I make this one food that is a recipe, right? My personal beloved dead. Then we have the mighty dead, which is sometimes also called the mighty dead of the craft. And those dead, those ancestors, those beloveds are the witches.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who mostly we don't know, the midwives, the herbalists, the wart cunning women, those who were doing the herb craft and the spell work in tiny villages and passing on their knowledge and
mm-hmm.
passing on their knowledge and passing on their knowledge until we get to Gerald Gardner and Raymond Buckland and Doreen Valiente and these names of more modern witches,
right?
Starhawk and Z Budapest and all of these names. And some of those folks, like Gardner and Valiente, they're dead. They're our mighty dead.
Mm-hmm.
Witchcraft, modern paganism wouldn't look the way it is if all of those ancestors hadn't brought the craft
mm-hmm.
forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we give, at least in the reclaiming tradition, and I know this is kind of, it seems like this is spreading, this concept of the mighty dead of the craft,
mm-hmm.
but giving special honor to the witches, giving
right.
special honor to those who were persecuted as witches or who kept it hidden,
mm-hmm.
but who kept the chain going.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's very beautiful.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we need to look at what we want to give you for the Samhain time frame, which would be something.
Home adventures.
Some home adventures for you to do. Not a homework, just
no,
an adventure.
An adventure. Yeah.
Okay. So basically we're looking at setting what we call a dumb supper.
Right.
So would you like to take it away on that one?
Sure. Sure. So, you know, we've kind of tiptoed around this, and a dumb supper, or what I call the dinner with the dead.
Mm-hmm.
But the new moon is on Sunday, right? So on Halloween, on Samhain, it'll be extra dark.
Yes.
It'll be extra witchy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an opportunity to connect to your ancestors and your beloved dead. So set a beautiful table. Take out the fine china that you only use at Christmas. You know, use the plates that aren't chipped.
Amen to that one.
If you have any. I don't know that I do. But, you know, lay out something beautiful as if you were expecting very important company.
Mm-hmm.
And when you set the table, you know, you may want to invite friends and make this a big thing, or you can do this alone. This
mm-hmm.
is a solitary practice or a coven practice or
mm-hmm.
a huge party practice,
mm-hmm.
whatever. But set a beautiful table and set a specific place of honor for the dead.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure they have a napkin and a comfortable chair and all of those things. And what's great is, my personal thing is, if you do this with a large group, make it a potluck
mm-hmm.
and have everyone bring a dish of their ancestry. And then you get to learn all of this cool stuff.
Right.
Or if you're doing it as a solitary, make some of your favorite family meals.
Mm-hmm.
Or make some of the meals that would have been connected to your ancestry. I often make cheesecake because I'm French,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's easy to make.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then you make a plate for the dead,
mm-hmm.
and you light a candle for the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have stories, you tell stories, and you toast to them, and you honor them, and you leave that food overnight,
mm-hmm.
right, so that they can eat their fill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very simple and sweet way to honor Samhain.
Mm-hmm. I think it is. And then if you can, and you're an area that is willing, you can take the actual food and the things that are viable and put out for the animals to take their actual nourishment from that.
Right.
Of course, we have to be careful because feeding things like that, we would be feeding rats and raccoons and things like that, wildlife. But at this point, that sounds like a really wonderful experience,
mm-hmm.
something that even, you know, any one of us can do without having to go into a huge production.
Right, right.
But that would be it. And put your pictures out of your family.
Absolutely.
And special items of people that you've lost in, you know, the more recent past. And commune with them.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be big. It just has to be a moment in time where you say, I am here. I am listening.
Yeah. I remember you.
I remember you.
Yeah. We say what is remembered lives when we toast. What is remembered lives. I mean,
and that as long as you don't have to visit a grave. They might not even be in the same country or the same
right.
state.
Right.
But you can remember their essence of who they were and who they are to you.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
And then go out and put on a mask and run around and
yeah.
tear the heck out.
Go to a party and
everybody.
Shake your tail feather.
Shake your tail feather.
Yeah.
For sure. So that is what we've got here. It's, you know, our gifts to you.
Yeah.
And
you'll have a wonderful Samhain.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting that it's on a Monday.
I know.
And I hope that for in our area that it does hold off raining for all those little kids going out
right.
to
yeah,
the
it is
tree.
Supposed to rain.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
So, and we'll be back next week. Same time.
Same place with
Pentacles.
Pentacles.
The last of, well, the last of the elemental tools.
The elemental tool.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that I think we will follow up on will be some other tools that are not
yeah.
as, you know, primary.
Foundational.
Foundational.
Yes. This,
yes.
This will complete the foundational tools. And then we'll
sound so, how do I want to put this? Institutional. None of us really are, but that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. So have a wonderful time. Enjoy yourself. And I'll go.
Samhain.
Samhain.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.